We'll call to order the Senate Committee on the Environment and Natural Resources. Today is the 23rd of February. It is a Monday, and we have one public hearing scheduled for today on our agenda. That will be on Senate Bill 25. And so I'm going to open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 25. And before I call the panelists up, I'll just kind of let you all know what I envision for this hearing. We'll have Senators Farioli and Hansel here to introduce the legislation. We'll have a panel of proponents, and then we'll have a panel of opponents, and then we'll have some folks from a couple of affected agencies that'll be here to answer questions about the bill that the committee may have. And then once we have finished those panels, we'll move into a process of just hearing from folks that have signed up that want to testify, and both for and against, and we'll do our best to go back and forth. We have two members of the committee that have to leave at 4:30, and we will be done at 5. Whether everybody's had a chance to testify or not, I'm sorry if we can't make it to everybody. I hope that we can, though. But we do have a little bit more time scheduled for those two for those panels up front, because they're going to speak a little bit more about some of the technical details. And then when we move past those panels, we'll be going into, you know, two minutes for folks from the public that wish to weigh in on the issue. So hope to have a fair hearing on the issue. And so having said that, no questions from the committee members. Senators, would you care to kick us off?
Chair Edwards and members of the committee, for the record, Bill Hansel, State Senator from District 29. I come before your committee today to talk about Senate Bill 25 and the small counties in rural Oregon. Senate Bill 25 is designed for counties with a population of equal to or less than 50,000. It would allow for rural counties to adopt comprehensive land use plans in order to better suit their individual needs. Currently, the state of Oregon has one-size-fits-all model for land use that might work well for Multnomah and Washington counties, but might not work so well for Malheur and Wallowa counties. Oregon has land use laws that create barriers for growth in rural Oregon. Senate Bill 25 has the goal of respecting the regional differences in the state by preserving the characteristics and traditional economic activities that are an inherent quality of life in most of eastern Oregon. We will be able to start reversing the urban-rural divide the state of Oregon is experiencing. In order to both retain and enhance the job base in rural areas, Senate Bill 25 ensures that counties have the flexibility to create, control, and facilitate the unique expression of their business development. As this bill is written, it would allow for 8 counties: Sherman, Gillam, Wallowa, Baker, Harney, Malheur, Grant, and Wheeler counties to provide tools where local planners and county commissioners / courts can have some flexibility to help turn the tide and create a growing population and create prosperous job growth across the state. If a local government based on the federal census does not meet the necessary criteria, they must amend their plan within a year to comply with the statewide land use planning goals. Many of the 8 counties are very excited about this opportunity and would love the opportunity to try to grow their counties. Senate Bill 25 is modeled after the Washington Growth Patterns Act, something that is working well in rural parts of Washington. And I believe this is something that we can work in the rural parts of Oregon as well. I'm happy to answer any questions you might have when Senator Farioli concludes. Otherwise, I'll head to my committee meeting.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. State Senator Ted Farioli, District 30, most of the east side of the state of Oregon, everywhere that Senator Hansel is not. I just wanted to point out the obvious, which I'm highly qualified to do. The fact is that Eastern Oregon counties are going backwards economically, and they have done so for quite a while. The reasons that that is happening are just manifold. Changes in society, consolidation of land, economic forces essentially that are global in nature. There's a whole different panoply of reasons, but really part of our challenge as legislators is to try to make our communities sustainable and to give people opportunity wherever they live. And we don't actually create the opportunity. We basically remove the barriers to opportunity. What comes before you today is something that we think will help remove some of the barriers to opportunity and help local communities deal with the question of falling population, falling school enrollments, struggling with the definition of sustainability that seems to include an institutional suppression of rural economies, although that is not our stated policy. I would have you come to some of our communities and just look at the folks that are there trying to maintain and operate the infrastructure. The city of Mount Vernon, for instance, this is apocryphal, has a guy in blue coveralls with a Bob embroidered on the coveralls, and he's the public works department for the school, for this entire town. He has the same responsibility for operating the wastewater treatment facility and clean water system as you know, the hundreds and hundreds of folks that you would find in any metropolitan area. Same laws apply, same requirements apply. So limited capacity is part of our problem. But some of the solutions to our problem would be to reverse the decline in population, and the only way to do that is to attract new industry, new job opportunities, new residents. We looked around the region to try to find a viable model for discussion and to offer up to the committee and to the legislature as a solution to this erosion of capacity, and the model exists in Washington State. Since 1990, Washington State has had an opt-out provision for the land use, centralized land use planning. That's allowed the Eastern Oregon, Washington County, Eastern Washington counties to cut through some of the red tape and actually to really help their local industries thrive. And when I compare Eastern Washington with Eastern Oregon, the counties that have enacted this model, I believe, at least from my perspective from this side of the river, look like they're thriving. The unemployment is lower, the job opportunities seem to be greater, the loss of population seems to be less of an issue. So I would like to ask you to listen carefully to the proponents. I would also like to ask you to listen carefully to those that have concerns and try to put those concerns and the advocacy of proponents into some sort of perspective. When I look across this river into Washington State, I don't see uncontrolled, rampant commercial development in the Eastern Oregon or Eastern Washington counties that have opted out. I don't see the destruction of the environment. I don't see urban sprawl in a manner that would be corrosive to the community. What I do see is a group of people that have looked at a sustainability model that allows local communities to have the flexibility they need to make local decisions that benefit the opportunities of the citizens. Those communities seem to be, to me at least, more attractive economically. They seem to be more sustainable economically. And I'd argue that that flexibility hasn't led to a diminution of the quality of living. It's led to an increase. Their schools are more sustainable. The infrastructure is better funded, more modern. The opportunity for employment is greater. I believe that some of those things at least are derived as a result of their flexibility in local land use planning. So those are the things I would offer. I think you'll hear some concerns voiced about environmental issues. I know that one of the ways that we get to the nub of the issue is to have all sides surface their concerns so that they can be discussed. But I believe that there are no issues that will be raised that cannot be adequately addressed if we work together to achieve the goal, which is a definition of sustainability that truly sustains communities wherever they are in Oregon, and not a definition of sustainability that features centralized planning and loss of population as their two main features. So with that, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, any questions?
I do have a question for Senator Hansel. Could you read off the list of counties again? I was writing as quickly as I could.
You bet. In my district, it's Sherman, mm-hmm. Gillum, Wallowa. In Ted's district, Senator Ferriola's district, Baker, Malheur, Harney, Grant, and Wheeler.
And Mr. Chairman, if you have not received the letters in support of the proposal, they'll be distributed to you. Each of the counties is on very short notice. Taking the opportunity to write letters in support of this concept because they believe it will give them an opportunity to talk to potential new employers about coming to their communities and actually having an opportunity to get through a land use process in less than 3 years. So, you know, what we're up against in Eastern Oregon is competition from Washington, Idaho, and Nevada. For the kinds of businesses that would locate in these counties. And all of them have a quicker, more nimble, more responsive land use system. Their citizens are just every bit as concerned as Oregonians are about the quality of life and environment. But they seem to have more sustainable economic decisions being made, not at a central planning level, but at a local level. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions for the panel? Okay. Thank you both. Next, we're going to call up Judge Wheeler, Dave Honeycutt, and Sean Cleave. Judge Perry, Wheeler County. That'd be fine. Yeah. What I'd like to do is, if you could try to keep the panel's testimony to 10 minutes, and then the opponent's panel will also be 10 minutes, but we'll have chances for question and answer, and then hopefully we'll be able to get as many of the citizens in as well, so afterwards. So, okay. So, and I don't care who starts.
I'll go first. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Dave Honeycutt, Oregonians in Action, speaking here in support of Senate Bill 25. I handed out copies of written testimony, and on that written testimony, attached to the back of that written testimony, you'll find letters in support from six of the counties, a separate sheet with the Wallowa counties. We got that one a little late. And then I got an email today from Judge Grasty, Steve Grasty in Harney County, who's back in Washington, D.C., with most of the county commissioners and the AOC team at a National Association of County conference. And Judge Grasty indicates that the Harney County loves the concepts included in the bill, but has a concern about trying to stave off an Endangered Species Act listing for the sage grouse. And so they may choose, if the bill is enacted, to opt or to continue with the statewide land use goals in an effort to avoid an ESA listing of their sage grouse, which is fine. What the bill does, as I think both the two senators testified, and the bill represents virtually the entirety of both Senator Hansel and Senator Ferrioli's district, so I'm glad they were here in support of that, of the bill. What the bill does, it's patterned after Washington's Growth Management Act. I believe, as Senator Ferrioli indicated, Washington's Growth Management Act was enacted in 1990, 17 years after Senate Bill 100. So the Washington legislature had the 17 years worth of hindsight to see what worked and what didn't as Oregon struggled to implement their plan. Under Washington's Growth Management Act, their small non-growing counties have the ability to opt out of compliance with the GMA provisions. And out of Washington's 39 counties, 10 of those 39 counties have opted out of the GMA. The criteria used under the Growth Management Act are the same as the criteria used in Senate Bill 25. Counties smaller than 50,000 population, which have not shown any growth between the last two censuses. And in Oregon, that would apply to eight counties. There are eight counties in Oregon that are smaller than 50,000 in population, and between 2000 and 2010 have not grown. Those are the eight counties that Senator Hansel listed, basically Ted Ferrioli and Bill Hansel's district, minus Umatilla County for Senator Hansel. The idea behind the bill reflects what I think, when we hear from opponents, we'll hear what I refer to as the parade of horribles, the terrible things that could happen if this bill were enacted. I think we just need to look at the facts, the existing facts, and we see the parade of horribles that's occurring right now in these counties. I compared, and there's a chart in the testimony that I've handed out, that shows the growth rates between 1950 and 2012 in these eight separate counties. And what we'll find is that with the exception of Harney County and Malheur County, which have both have some slight growth in 62 years, six out of the remaining eight counties, that's Baker, Wallowa, Grant, Wheeler, Sherman, and Gillam counties, are smaller today in population than they were in 1950. This is not the Portland metropolitan area. These areas are not growing. They are shrinking, and they are dying. That's an issue that not only is obviously bad for those communities, it puts tremendous pressure on the residents, the remaining residents of those communities, to keep the community alive, to pay for the services in those communities, and it significantly limits the economic ability. You are losing generations of families from these, of children from these communities who can't stay in the community and continue to live there because they have to go somewhere else to find a job. And that's wrong, and that's a crisis. We talk about helping rural Oregon, and we talk about the crisis in eastern Oregon, and yet it seems that we're hard-pressed in this building to do something about it. This bill will do that.
You have 5 minutes.
Okay. The total combined population of these eight counties is 72,998 people. They've grown by 3,000 people in the last 62 years, and there's 72,998. These eight counties represent 35,000 square miles, or over a third of the state of Oregon. So you've got 72,000 people and 35,000 square miles. Contrast that with Medford. Medford has 77,000 people, bigger than the eight counties combined, in 25 square miles. So we are talking about frontier counties. These counties need help. All of the counties are the counties. You've got the letters from the counties. They're asking you for this. This is not an issue of the environmentalists versus the developers. Your local government partners are asking you for this, and we're hoping that you'll give them a break and support the bill.
Thank you, George.
Good afternoon. Excuse me. Good afternoon, Chair Edwards, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Sean Cleave, representing the Oregon Association of Realtors. Good analogy to my friend to my right. I was going to say, you know, by way of comparison in the bill, 50,000, a population of 50,000 is really no larger than the city of Albany. And we're talking about a small number of counties that would be impacted by this bill. I think, you know, rather than talking about the specifics in the bill, I guess I bring a slightly interesting perspective, having lobbied for the Oregon Farm Bureau in a prior job, and definitely spending a lot of time regarding rural development and Oregon's land use system. There's three areas of Oregon law that are kind of the third rail in politics. There's vote by mail, there's pump your own gas, and there's the land use system. And it's probably good for career development if legislators steer away from those three topics. However, rather than taking a bill like Senate Bill 25 and placing it in what we all like to do, which is either the good or the bad column, which I think a lot of people will talk about today, I'd like to take the opportunity to just ask the committee to at least put it in the interesting column, to have some conversations about giving some of these counties, which are exceptionally small in population, some opportunities to try something different. In over 15 years in this building, I have been asked multiple times by Democrats and Republicans alike, you know, Sean, Oregon's land use system seems to be broken. There are constantly opportunities that are being brought before the assembly to talk about modifying it in some way. What's the fix? And my response is simple. We have a statewide land use system. Thus, problems in resolving that system is the forte of the assembly when those issues can't be resolved by agencies. So definitely a very interesting concept. And if you'd like to ask me any questions, I might be of better use that way. But thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead. Chair Edwards, senators, I'd like to let my planner have the floor for the most part, but I just like to point out the fact that our Judge Perry, Wheeler County. I'd like to point out our diminishing populations in our communities, and our school enrollment has gotten such that we have had to go out and have boarding schools in order to have enough children to even have a school in a community to make qualifications and to make it financially work for our schools. So with this, I just see it as a tool that a lot of our frontier counties can use to potentially get that reversed and try to get some stability in our communities for which the best meter of that is enrollment in schools. I'm going to allow my planner to read into the record her testimony that's in front of you. So,
thank
for
you.
The record.
Hi, my name is Robin Thompson. I'm the planning director. I'm also the road department secretary. I'm also the GIS specialist. I wear multiple hats, as we do in the small counties. Wheeler County, in particular, we've had a 47% drop in population since I graduated from school. And right now, our families cannot support their children to return to help out with the farms. Wheeler County has less than 0.5% of high-value farmland. So what are we protecting? In our county, we're protecting the rocks. We feel like the state is not interested in our county in particular, and I know overall that's not the case, but I am obligated in my job to use, for example, soil studies before I can make a decision. We don't even have a soil study for our county, so what am I supposed to use? Our local landowners, they know what is viable land and what is not viable land. I would challenge a good portion of the people in this room if they could draw a map to our county. We are very small. Multnomah County has somewhere in the neighborhood of 1,500 people per square mile. We have 1,500 in our entire county, just barely. We have less than one person per square mile. Our counties are bleeding out, and we need assistance, but we do not want to have our hand out all the time. We would like to have some local control in those decisions. Thank you.
Thank you, and thanks for making the drive over. Are there questions for the panel of committee members? Go ahead, Senator Olson.
Ma'am, thank you very much for coming and testifying. I know you have traveled a long way. If this bill was to pass, how would it benefit you in the work that you do for the county to make it simpler for whatever would come there? And could you explain what might come to your county?
I think probably before we can make any advances in the employment sector, we have to have people. And I can tell you that I have calls every week. I have people lined up waiting because I have actually been working with my planning commission for the last 2.5 years on trying to form some sort of a bill to come to the legislature on our own to see if we could get away. I don't want to say get away from land use planning, but to get a different set of rules. It just does not work. We need an increase in population, and we are to the point in our county, we have very few parcels of land that we can cut off the smaller parcels, non-farm parcels, because most of them have already been touched. And by statute, I can't break any of those smaller parcels off anymore.
Follow-up?
Yeah, follow-up.
I know one of the concerns you'll hear is the fact that you will be subdividing larger portions into smaller portions, which will take away the basic criteria of the land use to keep the big farms and stuff like that. How would you react to that? How would you answer that question?
When your land is made up of such small sections that are actually farmable, our landscape is so diverse that you're hard-pressed to get a manageable 100 acres even in one spot. That's not cut off. We actually have a few people in our county that, well, for instance, we have a man that has about 4,000 acres on his ranch. He actually makes more money on his one little tiny piece. He actually raises rhubarb and sells it down here in the valley. He makes more money on that 10 acres than he makes on the rest of his ranch because it's rock. The rock is good maybe if it has fossils in it.
Thank you.
Any questions?
Yes, Senator Dunbar.
Thanks. Just further follow-up from Wheeler, your perspective in Wheeler. As I understand it, a big part of the problem is employment, right? Mm-hmm. Jobs in Wheeler. I mean, that's the big challenge. So it's not going to be enough just to have more people move in, mm-hmm. but there need to be jobs for them. And so I wonder if you'd address that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
thanks, Judge.
I'd like to field this question, Judge Perry, for the record. That would be the ability to have these 20 and 10-acre parcels, maybe 30-acre parcels, whatever the Planning Commission would settle on, to have home industries we have fiber soon coming to our county and to be able to work at home from the Internet. There's a big demand, as the planner was alluding to, calls every day asking about parcels that aren't 160-plus acres that are more rural properties that are 25 acres, 10-acre parcels that they could actually work from home on, not necessarily doing an agricultural practice, but an internet type business from home. So.
Any other questions? Thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
Next, we're going to call up the next panel, and that will be Jason Weiner, Peggy Lynch, and Marianne Nash.
Chair Edwards, members of the committee, my name is Jason Miner for the record. I'm the executive director of 1000 Friends of Oregon. Thank you for the opportunity to present testimony opposing SB 25 legislation to suspend Oregon's planning program in 8 counties. 1000 Friends is a membership organization that works with Oregonians to build livable rural and urban communities and protect family farms and forests across the state. I'd like to highlight a couple of things and go off written testimony for a moment. And that's To point out that the land use planning program wasn't put in place solely to address population growth or to address sprawl or to deal with the outmigration of population. The planning program has 19 goals, 14 of which apply across the state. Some of those goals address things like the best use of limited public resources. And I actually came to land use planning, and frankly, I'm passionate about land use planning because I believe that the way to protect public budgets and small local governments is to make rational decisions in where we invest in new roads, new services, new bandwidth, and to make sure that those investments are efficient and focused and do not sprawl across the landscape. Land use planning is not just a story of natural resource conservation. It's not just a story of EFU land. It's not just a story of farm and forest land. It's not a story of rural versus urban environments. It's a story of the investments that we make as a state, that we make as local governments. It's a story of investing in areas where we can sustain the infrastructure and investing in ways where we don't get ourselves in the bind that we've faced, at least since 2008, of trying to figure out how to find funds to repair crumbling road networks, bridges, and other infrastructure. Land use planning in Oregon provides us a structure in which to have those conversations, a way to focus our investments in places where people live, where people make the most frequent use of roads and networks all across the state, and to fight, frankly, the economic forces of speculation. Too often there is pressure to develop land for the limited benefit of a few instead of sustaining it in farm and forest land, which has protected this state's economy or been a fundamental part of the state's economy for hundreds of years. I point out that far from a parade of horribles, what I intend to present today is actually a story of success and also a story of opportunity. We've talked about the number of people who live in the eastern Oregon counties that would be affected by SB 25. And I'd like to point out that by waiving Oregon's land use planning rules, you also waive their opportunity to take advantage of Goal 1. And Goal 1 is the right of citizens in Oregon to participate in land use decisions that affect them. That's a fundamental goal. It hasn't been addressed today and isn't addressed by this bill. And I'd be deeply concerned that we would deny 70-some thousand Oregonians the right to participate in land use processes. I also want to point out that from prior testimony, one of the amazing things that that Oregon's land use planning program does is it provides us a structure to work together to address larger and even national challenges. Since 2010, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has been working with Oregon to find a way to avert a sage-grouse listing. And since at least 2012, SageCon and other partners have come together to work through the Goal 5 process in which counties will be empowered to match or to map their local sage-grouse resources and work to avert an ESA listing under the federal regulations. The counties where that is most important are Harney, Malheur, and Lake County, at least to the best of my understanding of where sage-grouse populations are most prevalent. So far, I don't think that Lake County has been represented in the conversation today. You heard testimony that Harney County is not sure that they would actually want to take advantage of this bill. And my point to you would be, if you reflect back on the Oregon Plan for Salmon and Watersheds, when the state of Oregon tried to work as an entity to avert listings of anadromous fish, one of the big challenges there was, are there meaningful, measurable rules that the state is going to put in place and enforce that the federal government can rely on to make sure that those listings don't happen? Those weren't in place, and those fish were listed, and the Oregon Plan did not succeed at its initial effort. I would point to the sage-grouse plan that's currently coming together and point to Goal 5 efforts and suggest to you that a single county, Malheur County, is not going to, by opting into this, be able to meaningfully say to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service that there's a meaningful Oregon plan in place for protecting sage-grouse. It's not going to be, it won't be effective for a single county to say we're participating in Goal 5. It's the entire range of sage-grouse that the federal government will be looking at when they're considering a listing. So I'd ask you to consider, at least in the presentation I've heard today, I've only heard of one of the three counties most affected by sage-grouse interested in participating in this, and I'd be concerned for the other two. I wanted to point out that agriculture remains Oregon's second largest industry. One out of eight jobs in the state is agriculture-related, and the industry is directly tied to about $22 billion in the sales of goods and services. Unless we think that agriculture is just a western or a wet side of Oregon phenomena, Three of Oregon's top five producing agricultural counties are in eastern Oregon. The top five are Marion, Umatilla, Morrow, Clackamas, and Malheur. And so there is a viable agricultural industry on the east side. Six of the eight highest grossing agricultural commodities in the state have a strong nexus to eastern Oregon, including wheat, potatoes, onions, and livestock. In these eight counties, waiving land use planning would also decouple transportation planning, infrastructure planning, the planning needs for housing, as well as the protection of wildlife and natural places that have been mentioned. I'd also point out that the Washington Growth Management Act has been mentioned several times today. The Growth Management Act went into its full effect in 1990, and it allows rural counties to opt out of the program. I will point out that 10 counties have taken advantage of this and opted out. 21 rural counties have opted in. The counties that have chosen to opt in saw their median household incomes rise by 39% from 1990 to 2010, while the opt-out counties had theirs rise by only 36%. So there's a 3 percentage point difference. And the counties that are actually doing better on median household income are the ones that have opted into the program. So if we are talking about a way to plan for job creation, for wealth, to retain populations in rural Oregon, there are many, many reasons that people are leaving eastern Oregon communities, and there are many, many reasons why eastern Oregon is suffering. Many of those have been outlined by the pro panel already. I'd offer that land use planning is not one of them, and that in fact, the neighbor to the north that we have referenced demonstrates that. Thanks for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you.
Peggy Lynch, League of Women Voters of Oregon. The League of Women Voters is a nonpartisan grassroots political organization that encourages the informed and active participation in government. And that's why I'm here today. The League has supported the land use planning program since the 1950s. And land use planning is not this amorphous kind of thing. It's where people live. It's where they work. It's where they play, where they shop, and how they get there. It's about the economy of our state and of local areas. These eight counties, I have provided you in OLAS with a chart from July of 2014 that shows the value of agricultural crops in the state of Oregon. I hope you have an opportunity to look at them. These are important agricultural counties. Agriculture is the economic engine of eastern Oregon. And yes, the population has decreased as we have had various farm equipment that has required less people to actually do the work. That's part of what's happened. Frankly, the fact that we have less money for K-12 schools mean there are less school teachers, and school teachers have been the and school districts have been the economic engine of many of these small towns in rural Oregon. So there are other factors that cause this. And the League is really interested and excited to help rural Oregon cities have more population. If they can find industries to come to those cities, that would be great. The discussion we seem to be having relates to those areas outside of cities. The comments that that Jason mentioned regarding public facilities, the issue that Senator Ferrioli mentioned about Mount Vernon and their one public works person, unless the city of Mount Vernon has more population, the city won't get more money for those services. And that's where I hope that you consider focusing your energies. Senate Bill 2254 from the 2013 session actually is doing, we're working on rulemaking to try to assist having better rules around how to let smaller communities expand their urban growth boundaries if they need to do that. Allowing sprawl, and you just heard, the whole issue is let us have subdivisions in our agricultural areas. And the League has a real problem with that for a number of reasons, including the fact that Director Koba in a recent legislative committee said, we won't have enough agricultural land worldwide to feed the growing world population of over 9 billion people. We have got to save our agricultural land for the agricultural use. We are talking about investing more money for water to allow for better crops and more agricultural dollars coming in, investment coming in. Those are the things we need to talk about to help rural Oregon go forward, and I'm going to let the Farm Bureau talk.
Thank you. Chair Edwards, members of the committee, I am Marianne Nash with the Oregon Farm Bureau. Oregon Farm Bureau is Oregon's largest grassroots agricultural organization, representing 8,000 member families who own land across the state. Oregon Farm Bureau opposes this legislation. Oregon's land use system currently provides important protections for agricultural lands. An individual county should not be able to undo those protections. Oregon's exclusive farm use policy calls for the preservation of a maximum amount of the limited supply of agricultural land in order to maintain the agricultural economy of the state. Conflicting land uses in areas devoted to agricultural use can have a significant impact on farmland in Oregon and a significant impact on the economy of rural counties. Oregon's land use system is vital in ensuring that conflicts in farm and ranch land be reduced, which enables the adjacent land to stay in production and be transferred among generations. Protection of Oregon's productive farmland is of paramount importance in Oregon's land use planning process, and local governments are charged with ensuring that this important objective is achieved through their decisions. Allowing rural counties to set their own land use planning goals jeopardizes Oregon's unique system and could make it more difficult for farmers and ranchers to stay in business due to variable land prices, conflicting uses, and encroachment from expanding towns and cities. While Oregon Farm Bureau strongly supports efforts to revitalize our rural economies, we believe that protecting agricultural lands must be paramount among these efforts. We urge the committee to oppose this legislation as contrary to those interests. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Chair Edwards, really quickly, so I just have sent to the administrator the differences that are now recognized amongst areas of Oregon in our land use system. It is not a one-size-fits-all system, and although people continue to try to say that, it is not. And it's also a system with local implementation. So we have broad rules with local implementation. Just wanted to make sure that got on the record. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? By members of the committee. Senator Olson.
Thank you. Mr. Miner, you had used the term economic forces of speculation. Is there rampant speculation in those eight counties that we've talked about?
I don't know. I wouldn't characterize rampant speculation as the kind of speculation I meant to highlight. What I meant to highlight is that speculation on any of the land base involved in agriculture is a threat to agriculture, and generally that the price for the development value of a piece of land can outcompete the agricultural value of a piece of land in many cases. Often with our system of urban growth boundaries, often one of the unintended consequences is that there's land immediately outside the urban growth boundary, often in a resource use like farming, that suddenly is of great value. We've created a lot of focus or of attention on those areas as areas for future development.
Well, yeah. I can see concern for the valley, some of the more prosperous counties, but the counties that are on the list, and Ms. Lynch, you, I looked at your chart here, and I picked out Wallawa is 26, Grant's 29, Wheeler's 36, Sherman's 25, Gilliam's 31. The very successful county is Malheur, and that's 4, and the other two are 19 and 18. So it's not like they're rampantly going ballistic in their farmland. The question is, we heard testimony prior to this that there are pieces that are non-farmable. And if they're non-farmable, they're non-productive. And if they're non-productive, why couldn't those pieces be put to a use that's beneficial to the county?
Chair Edwards, Senator Olson, so there is a system in Oregon that allows for counties to have that conversation if they can choose to show that those are not EFU lands, they're not high-value farmlands, they have an opportunity to do that.
Chair Edwards, Vice Chair Olson, also following up on that point, I think another issue there is the conflicts that can come when you have non-farm uses adjacent to farm uses, and if, for example, somebody wanted to put, you know, a wild bird preserve out there, and that was what they were going to do, not even an intensive use, but a lot of the traffic impacts that can come with that, particularly in rural ranch communities, you have issues with open gates, people letting cows out, I've come from a ranching background in Eastern Oregon, and we used to have joggers come to our house terrified because they ran into our cows. And, you know, and so those kinds of conflicts can exist the more that you place farm uses next to non-farm uses. It just creates a tension and a conflict that can have big impacts on agricultural operations.
I'd like to answer that, if I could.
Yeah. Yeah,
at least pose my position on that. When you have a county that has 1,424 people in it, I don't see rampant problem with that. Those people understand farming. They understand the community. And it's we city slickers that probably cause more problem out there than the people that live there.
Right.
And I think the county should be able to at least have the opportunity to look at the ability to develop some of that land. I live next to a farm. We have a law in the state called the right to farm.
Right.
And it's not exciting when the chicken manure goes on the field. I understand the problems and the consequences of that. But I think in these counties that are so small in population, they have to be able to do something to stimulate opportunity. And they're restricted because of these laws. And you say we need their, you say that not we, but they need to report back if they want to do this. Well, why can't they be the arbiter of their own fate? Give them a little leeway. Give them push it out a little bit so these counties can actually survive. Economically, we're driving them into the poorhouse. We are driving them into the poorhouse. They should have at least have an opportunity to say, we don't want to be there.
That sounded like a rhetorical question / statement. So you don't need to answer.
You don't have to ask. You don't always have to ask questions.
Yeah.
Chris. Yeah. Thanks, Mr. Chair. Jason, I have a question. One of the arguments that we heard in support of this Senate Bill 25 is the success of the program in Washington State in comparison to our experience here in Oregon. Do you know, has there been any research into that? I mean, how valid a concern should that be for us?
By the metrics that I believe, not to speak for DLCD with them in the room, but by the metrics that I've seen them present on the House side and other, Chair Edwards, Senator Dembro, the rate of farmland loss in Oregon is less than our neighbor to the north and less than our neighboring states in general. And the metrics by which you evaluate whether our infrastructure investments have been efficient in urban areas, whether it's commute times or other infrastructure measurements, again, we're doing better than the amount of land consumed per person in our urban areas. We're doing better than our neighbors to the north, south, or to the east. So by those metrics, the Oregon plan is more successful.
And if I follow up, and how about, do you know, in terms of the, you know, the poverty, economic development, you know, kinds of concerns that we've heard expressed?
Chair Edwards, Senator Dembro, I think that those are deep concerns that the state of Oregon does have to deal with. I intend my testimony today to suggest that looking at the Growth Management Act in Washington, the counties in eastern Washington that are actually doing better are the ones that are in the Growth Management Act. The ones that are not doing as well are the ones that are out. And so, you know, to reiterate a point that I hope I got to in my testimony, if we're looking at job creation, I think that this is not the right approach. In fact, agriculture is the economic engine of this part of the state.
Thank you each for
Chair Edwards, Senator Dembro, the other part about this, and it's
a lot of people to get through, Peggy.
Okay. It is really important that we do care about all of Oregon. We care about all of those systems. But we really also need to make sure that the businesses that would create those jobs are in places where they have the public services, which means they need to be in the cities where there are sewer and water and all of those things. So whatever we can do to help. But the phenomenon of dying rural counties is a nationwide problem. It's not an Oregon problem created by Oregon's land use system. And I think that's just a very real fact.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So the next panel is going to be some folks from some agencies who are here to answer some technical questions, provide some technical perspective. Carrie McLaren from DLCD, Brett Brownscombe from ODF&W, and anybody that is in your company that you would like to present on this as well.
I may call on them if we get to questions.
Okay.
But good afternoon, Chair Edwards, members of the committee. I'm one of the folks from the agencies. My name is Carrie McLaren, Deputy Director of the Department of Land Conservation and Development. And I appreciate the format of this today to allow us the opportunity to talk a little bit more deeply about what we see as some of the impacts of Senate Bill 25 and some concerns that we have. We've heard the overview of what the bill does in exempting certain counties and cities from the requirement to comply with the statewide land use planning goals. So I won't reiterate those here. But I do want to make one point before I go into sort of the meat of my testimony, which is that, and we do have written testimony. I'm not repeating it here. I'm going to pick up on a couple of points and add some extra. I don't need to duplicate that. Our department very much agrees with what we understand to be the objective of the bill, and that's to retain and enhance the job base in small rural counties for creating opportunities for business development and to retain and facilitate the expansion of existing businesses. I think that is a core interdepartmental and state value. We believe that the statewide land use planning program and goals actually assist in those objectives, and I think that's where you begin to see some of our concerns. The Farm Bureau and others testified to the protections of agricultural, both farming and ranch lands, as well as forest lands from incompatible development, both in the context of conflicts, also in the context, as we've seen more recently, out of concerns with increased risk of fire, wildfire, the cost both to human lives and the cost for fighting those fires. Secondly, and my colleague Brent Brownscombe is going to speak more directly to this, but ensuring that federally required environmental regulations are met with state and local responses that integrate the needs for rural communities that are in fact an Oregon-led response to those needs but meet the federal requirements so we can avoid listing of endangered species. And thirdly, ensuring that land use planning, including well-supported economic analyses and public facilities planning, paves the way for serviceable employment lands in rural areas. I think the land use planning program is, in fact, directed at all three of those goals and has been successful in large part in achieving them. So to just highlight a point, one of our concerns with Senate Bill 25 is the impact on farm, forest, and ranch lands, both with respect to fragmentation of the agricultural and ranch land base. Ranching certainly is a part of Eastern Oregon's economy, and it takes much more land than many of our more intensive crops here in Western Oregon. So in that sense, at that scale, we need actually greater protections. We also, and I spoke briefly to the concern with fragmentation of forest lands, both in terms of how that affects their economic productivity of putting those lands to commercial use in terms of, again, conflicts, but also the increases of fire and the costs associated with fighting those fires. Working in conjunction with our sister agencies through the regional solutions teams, which includes Business Oregon as one of our sister agencies, it has become increasingly apparent to us that the very real problems of a lagging economic recovery in Eastern Oregon are not related to land supply. Rather, to the extent that they are land use issues, those issues relate to the services that those lands need to serve the desired industry, whether those are improvements to road infrastructure, freight, rail, water, electricity, redundant power, et cetera. When we hear our sister agency, Business Oregon, talk about some of the other impediments, a very real one is a lack of a qualified and trained workforce. And again, that services to the lands and a focused and targeted economic development plan. The department routinely works with rural communities on planning for employment lands and economic development. The part that we really do help those communities with is that long-range planning for having adequate land inside their urban growth boundaries for employment, whether it's industrial or other types of employment industries. In the last few years, we've assisted the cities of Arlington, Nissa, Vail, and Ontario in expanding their urban growth boundaries, and rather significantly in the last year or last 2 years in Malheur County. One of the parts that I think is also important just to highlight in what we do is some of the issues that were addressed by Senator Farioli and others, as he said, don't have to do with land use. It requires this multi-agency, multidisciplinary approach. I think we're being successful in doing that through our regional solution centers, in part in aligning our programs, our technical assistance, our grant funding. These communities are very, very resource limited. You heard one of the planning directors talk about the many hats that she wears. It's not at all uncommon. And I think at the state level, you see a considerable amount of support going into technical assistance to assist those communities. The other couple of points before I would turn it over to Brett would be that there's a suggestion in the bill relating to urban level of services. And I think that was highlighted in the last panel, but that coterminous planning, the collective planning of both land supply and the services needed to actually make that land be functional, to bring it online, so to speak, are critical. And that's one of, I think, the important parts of our land use planning program. It's one of the ways in which we work with our cities in their urban growth boundary decisions to assure that they have adequate public facilities so that their lands are attractive. That raw land is not enough actually to attract new industry, nor is it enough to grow our existing businesses. We need to have those lands online and prepared. A more technical point about how this bill may or may not work with respect to state agencies is state agencies are all required to comply with the statewide land use planning goals, to comply with administrative rules and statutes, but also to comply and be consistent with local plans and regulations. Well, if we have a system where those two diverge, I would suggest that it could make the permitting process even more cumbersome, more difficult, and more complex rather than easier. Don't know that that's necessarily the case here, but in a first blush analysis, it certainly raises those concerns. The last point, and we would certainly be happy if the committee would so desire to do some additional research with respect to comparisons of Oregon and Washington on some of these metrics. Some of our analysis was referenced earlier just with respect to efficiency of land uses, people per square mile, loss of farm and forest land, and less loss of other resource uses than our state of Washington. I did very briefly look at employment statistics, just trying to get a sense, again, by land use metrics, we're doing better with the goals that we've set out and the goals that Washington have set out. By employment metrics, how are we doing? Only had time to find one, would be happy to dig deeper. But if you look at the counties in Washington that have opted out of the Growth Management Act, they actually have a slightly higher unemployment rate overall than the eight Oregon counties that would currently be subject to this bill. So in short, the department is concerned about the economic well-being of rural counties in the state. We think with our sister agencies, we are on a track to continue to put more focused energy and effort into assisting those communities to meet their economic recovery needs. And I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have. Thank you.
Brett, and then we'll go to questions.
Okay.
You've got about 3 minutes.
Okay. Sorry. Thanks, Chair Edwards. Good afternoon, Chair Edwards, members of the committee. For the record, Brett Brownscombe, Acting Deputy Director with the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. Thank you for the opportunity to discuss Senate Bill 25 with you today. To spare you the length, I have submitted written testimony. From the department's perspective, the counties that will be affected by this bill are indeed natural resource associated dependent counties. There's no argument with that from the department's end. And the department's view is the health of Oregon's fish, wildlife, and its habitat, and the health of Oregon's rural lands, communities, and economies are interdependent. And without getting into the details of what Senate Bill 25 would do, it would affect Goal 5, which is the statewide planning goal related to the protection of natural resources. And just by example, some of the natural resources that are protected under Goal 5 include wetlands, big game winter range, riparian corridors, natural areas, sensitive nesting habitat, and cultural resource sites. Given the time, what I'd like to do is get into one example, and this is the sagegrass example that others have alluded to. the potential impacts of Senate Bill 25 on the state's ongoing efforts to prevent the negative impacts of a potential Endangered Species Act listing determination for sage grouse in Oregon are certainly of concern to the department, and the broader implications of Goal 5 compliance or changes to Goal 5 compliance for other resource values are also of concern. Regarding sage grouse, through the SageCom partnership, which is a diverse partnership of entities, including counties, and there are seven primary Eastern Oregon counties that would be impacted or that have sage grouse habitat and significant sage grouse populations in their borders. There are other counties that would also have be affected by a potential ESA listing. The SageCom partnership includes those efforts. In the conversation the state's been having there with ODF&W and other agencies involved, with a whole host of partners, including the counties, has really been centered on building a strategy that is intended to achieve greater certainty, not just for the conservation of sage grouse, but also greater certainty for the future economic vitality of the eastern part of our state and the counties that we're talking about related to sage grouse. As part of that strategy, the Department of Fish and Wildlife is coordinating with the Department of Land Conservation and Development around a revision to its Goal 5 rules, Division 23 in particular. And the revision would, the intent of the revision is to include sage grouse as a listed Goal 5 resource. The purpose of doing so is not, it's not one of the state or for Department of Fish and Wildlife just seeking to serve the interests of conservation of a bird. It's also a much larger conversation about the future of and the predictability around economic development and rural community health in Eastern Oregon. So obviously, if Goal 5 compliance was no longer required, in Oregon counties containing sage grouse habitat were not required to comply with Goal 5, obviously the protections provided under Goal 5, if they do go into effect through the ongoing proposed rulemaking process, would not need to apply in those counties. The impacts of this are potentially significant, and I'm not here to speak for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. I certainly don't work for them. I'm not here to speak as on the part as a legal matter. ODF&W's perspective on the sage grouse story is this is one of optimism. This can be a success story for the state in terms of both conservation and predictability around economic development. So I am here to say, though, that through the state's planning efforts in the 11 state range wide Western conversation related to sage grouse and the potential Endangered Species Act listing, a lot of people are looking at what mechanisms states have in place to protect this bird and its habitat. So the example around sage grouse is in this context, it illuminates the potential push-pull between state approaches to state regulations and federal approaches, the federal government's approaches to federal regulations. And what we do here in Oregon could, through that push-pull relationship, affect what happens in the overall outcome around this potential sage grouse listing conversation. So I know and heard clearly the intentions of this bill around the vitality of rural Oregon, as articulated by the state's primary senators representing those counties, and Senator Farioli and Senator Hansel. The economic interests and motivations behind this bill, I would say there is some potential unintended consequences on the possible economic impacts to those counties related to the ongoing sage grouse conversation. I'll end there on the sage grouse piece. There are further impacts that this bill would have on critical resources such as big game rent range, and I won't get into that. I'll leave that to the written testimony and just extend thank you for the opportunity to have a discussion and note, hopefully, that this is a panel of people who work for agencies, not one of the bill opposition panels.
You're teetering. Thank you.
Let's see. This last year, the governor, Governor Kitzhaber, mentioned that he was going to do whatever he could or start to do some things for our eastern Oregon counties, our rural counties that are under distress. And so I would have liked to have seen our agencies that were working under that premises come to this hearing with a few suggestions of positives, or maybe not something like this exactly, but how you could work with this kind of thing in order to help these troubling counties. But all we hear is no, no, no. So where's the positives that were coming from the governor that you guys were going to, we were going to help Eastern Oregon? This is the first time in this session that we've had any kind of a hearing on Eastern Oregon and their economy, and how are we going to help those people over there? And I just hear no, no, no. So I heard that from Governor Kitzhaber. I hope that translates to Governor Brown also, because we've got some counties out there that are really struggling. Do you think, for LC or the LCD, are there evidence that you have that county officials are not protecting our farm and ranch land? Or you just made comments that they're not going to protect our farm and ranch land. Do you have evidence of that?
Chair Edwards, Senator Thompson, and I will correct if that was the either impression or statement that I made. I think the concern is that not knowing what the criteria, this bill, Senate Bill 25, doesn't set forth the criteria for what would qualify for farmland protection or really provide a framework, which isn't surprising because the bill isn't structured to do that. But what it does therefore raise is the concern about how would those farmlands be protected and managed, and what does that mean for those economies on which many of their economies are actually based on those farming and forest industries. I would also want to comment, if I could, relative to your first question in terms of what do we think needs to be done. I would want to highlight and reiterate some of my testimony about the importance, I think, of doing community development and economic development planning in these communities as an interdisciplinary set of agencies, primarily through the regional solutions teams, but also just through the work that we do with our regional reps. And so to that extent, that's why I identify the work that we did in Malheur County with the cities of Nyssa and Vail in Ontario and expanding their urban growth boundaries to expand the opportunities that they had to attract employers to that area. Another success that we had somewhat recently was in a little bit predating that was the city of Arlington, and expanding their urban growth boundary by several hundred acres for a pretty small community where they saw some opportunity to have industry related to the wind turbines that are going on in that area. I think that's really important and critical work to be done. We direct and prioritize some of our grant funding for those efforts. We, too, are a small agency. We're probably, we can't be everything to everybody, but increasing the capacity, providing that technical assistance, that grant funding, and walking some communities through evaluations of their employment lands analyses and opportunities for economic growth are important in activities we engage in daily.
In touch.
Follow up. Yep.
So one more question. Do you think our county officials are incapable of protecting farmland?
Chair Edwards, Senator Thompson, I don't know. I don't think that's the case. I'm not, again, here saying what I think is like what is going to happen, or here to disparage the work that any counties do. What I'm here is to try to describe why we think the framework that Oregon has under its statewide land use planning program and its goals actually serves to try to meet and maximize some of these competing objectives for communities in terms of their economic growth, their opportunities for charting a new course. Many of these counties, as Senator Farioli and others alluded to, are facing a myriad of of pressures that are resulting in a decline of their population and of their economic base. And that is of concern. We should be seeking to direct state resources where we can. We think it's through some of the technical assistance and the long-range planning is what we can provide from our department.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Other questions? Okay.
Chair Edwards, if I might, real quick, and Senator Thompson, just to something that struck my mind as important related to your question, and without speaking certainly for Governor Kitzhaber or Governor Brown, one thing as part of the sage-grouse planning effort that Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife is engaged in, and I left, this is not something I covered in my testimony, but it's relevant to your question, is the flip side of the land use planning rulemaking that DLCD is being asked to do is a rulemaking on the part of the Department of Fish and Wildlife or the Fish and Wildlife Commission around mitigation. And the new mitigation rulemaking would, in fact, expand opportunities, and this relates to economic development in sage-grouse country by trying to focus and avoid impacts of development in core sage-grouse habitat, but also allowing some flexibility compared to what currently exists that's important to certainly rural counties, but also to non-rural counties where wind, solar, geothermal, mining development businesses may exist that want to operate in rural counties. And so this conversation is much bigger than just the rural counties, although centered there. And there are clearly intentional things that, at least on the Department of Fish and Wildlife, that the department's being asked to do on the economic development front.
Thanks.
Thank you both for being here to answer questions. Thank you. We'll call up the next folks. So we have more people that are signed up to testify against than for. So what we're going to do is we're going to go against, then for, then against, and then we should be done. When we call you up in sets of four. So we're going to start out with Roger K. David, and I apologize if I don't say your name correctly. Roger K., David Inger, John Schaefer, and Aileen K. And let's keep it to 4 minutes apiece.
Good afternoon, Chair Edwards, members of the committee. My name is Roger Kay. I submitted testimony in writing that you should have in your folder. And basically, our organization and its individual members oppose Senate Bill 25, Friends of Marion County is a 501c3 farmland protection organization. We were founded in 1998. And of course, our mission is to protect farm and forest land, parks, and open space. I served on the Marion County Planning Commission for two terms, and I'm currently president of Friends of Marion County. And in 2010-2011, I was selected for the Public Advisory Committee, comprised of airport users, representatives of local municipalities, and concerned citizens, reviewing the 10-year Aurora Airport Master Plan. So I myself have some experience in the planning area. We are opposed to this bill because it would suspend the land use goals and allow 8 Eastern Oregon counties to redesignate all resource lands. The impacts would be profound. Transportation planning, wildlife protections, farm and forest land protection, and agriculture, forest-related jobs would be adversely affected. During the, quote, Great Recession, natural resource jobs survived while many urban area jobs were lost. If this bill passes, we can expect to see farm and forest-related jobs disappear and our statewide land use system in jeopardy. That is why we oppose Senate Bill 25, and we request a no vote of the committee on this bill. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for your testimony.
Yes, Chair Edwards and the rest of the members of the committee, thank you. My name is David Engen. I was born in Montana in a very small town in a very rural county. The main agricultural products were wheat, mustard, and some dairy. I dare say that county probably is much smaller than most of the counties we're talking about here in Oregon. And I've been a resident of Oregon for 50 years now. In 1959, I entered the United States Navy as an officer, and I was in the Navy for over 7 years. I went into the Merchant Marine after that, and I retired in the Merchant Marine with a master's license in 1989. And I was in California frequently and several other states, and I saw what happened in California in 1969 or 1959 when I first went in. There was a lot of open farmland between the cities down there where the Sacramento River ran through. And when I retired in 1989, that was all filled with housing, the whole area, which was astonishing to me. And I did not want to see that type of thing happen in Oregon. Thank heavens we had a governor, a Republican governor, who saw that also and also did not want to see that happen. I'm proud that Oregon passed Senate Bill 100 to actually help this state through the crisis that's coming ahead. And I am they used to say that Washington was 10 years behind California and that Oregon was 10 years behind Washington. Well, it looks like they've condensed that 10 years down a little bit here now. So I totally oppose this bill. I hope that the land use system for the whole state is not fractured like this. There should be laws for the whole state, not just for part of the state. Thank you very much. I appreciate your serving all of us.
Thank you for your testimony.
Chair Edwards, committee members, John Schaefer, Dallas, Oregon. My take on first reading Senate Bill 25 was that it is fallacious. The land use planning system provides for expansion of cities, provides for incorporating industries and jobs, and yet it is being beaten about the head and shoulders as being the cause of the problems of Eastern Oregon. Well, Eastern Oregon is basically a resource-based economy. Forest, farm, ranching, and those industries have been contracting. The gold was run out long ago in Grant County, in Baker County, and so on. The forests have been cut, and they're growing back as fast as they can. The problem with losing jobs, I think, is a lot due to technology. I am a mechanical engineer. I worked for a time for a company that made sawmill equipment. And the job that my dad had when I was born as a resawyer in a mill down on the Columbia River is now taken over by a computer-controlled, laser-guided set of set works. And it goes on and on like that through the mill. The harvesting of trees, if you ever get the chance to see a faller buncher out in the woods working, where he grabs the tree, cuts it off, debarks it, and slices it into lengths in about 60 seconds, one guy in a machine, that's where some of your jobs are going. The Senate Bill 25 talks about creating jobs, or doesn't talk about creating jobs. It just assumes that if we do away with land use, jobs are going to fall from the sky or something. I don't think that is quite the case. There's a lot of infrastructure around any sort of industry that needs to be provided that a small town out in remote county can't provide. Your best bet is to not interfere with your existing resource and expand your urban growth boundaries if you want more people and track what industries you can that don't require specialized infrastructure, support infrastructure. And I'd just like to say in closing that an internet business could be run successfully from your home, from the living room of your home. You don't need to be out in the country on 25 or 35 acres. So if you want to have people doing internet jobs, expand your urban growth boundary. Thank you.
Thank you.
This will be short. Chair Edwards, members of the committee, my name is Aileen Kay and I live in South Marion County. I'm here to speak against Senate Bill 25. And I'm not being facetious. When somebody told me about this bill, I did think it was a joke. I couldn't believe it. And I call it the Trojan Horse Bill. Because once you let one county do this, it would be very difficult to deny this to other counties. And I thought it was a joke because it flies in the face of the vote on Measure 49, for Measure 49. And it seems to me that our current land use laws already are adequate to allow growth in communities. For instance, in Crook County, over the last 2 years, a huge conglomerate by Facebook has been built. And they did that within the existing land use laws. I teach classes to people who provide in-home care to older people. One thing I suggest to them is that they advise their employers to never open the door to somebody that they don't know. It could be somebody intending to commit a home invasion robbery or assault. All that person needs is their toe in the door. So that's my view on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Okay, next up, we're going to hear from some proponents. Aaron Doyle and Commissioner David Brocksmith.
Does Brent have a man bag, a European man bag?
Go ahead. I'll finish her up.
Okay. Good evening. Chair Edwards, members of the committee, for the record, Aaron Doyle with the League of Oregon Cities. We've heard a lot of talk about counties, but there are 38 cities that would also be impacted by Senate Bill 25. And last Thursday, I reached out to them with a copy of the bill, and just given that of those 38 cities, I had emails for 36 of them, I got back as much information as I could, as quickly as I could, and this was the only, committee staff hand out a letter that was the only person who could get back to us quickly enough with a letter to talk about why they feel Senate Bill 25 would work for them in their smaller communities out in Eastern Oregon. But on top of that, I've had the pleasure of traveling out to Eastern Oregon a number of times as part of my job at the League, and one of the things that they do when they find out I handle land use as part of my portfolio is insist upon telling me that we need to do more for these communities in cutting down on the red tape and expense of doing economic development planning in Eastern Oregon. And that many of these communities can't afford to do what it takes under the land use system to amend a comprehensive plan in order to do the economic development that they would like to see done. I would like to say that all of our cities are very well aware of what it costs to provide infrastructure, and in fact struggle with that with the public facilities planning that they have to do now. And they're not going to go out and run amok with the public funds that they have to create a working infrastructure system. What they're going to do is the careful consideration that a local official always does in looking at the needs and desires of their community to determine what will best advance their city in creating more jobs and a better place to live for their residents. A key to that is maintaining the lifestyle that they've developed for themselves in Eastern Oregon and keeping the character of their town that they want. I think Senator Thompson's questions about would a county commissioner suddenly start planning against farm and forestry when that's their major economic driver is the real question here. And I think the answer is very validly no, because they recognize the economic development opportunities, the businesses that have been there, and they see those as their neighbors and their friends, and they're not going to want to so design a system that impacts those businesses out in order to get the next great technological advance when that doesn't make sense for their local government. Of the 38 cities that I was, of those I was able to get a hold of, at least four of them individually expressed interest in following up on this bill. I haven't had a chance to have the full conversation with them about whether or not they'd want to opt out if their county opted out. But there is interest in looking at how the land use system can be reformed in Eastern Oregon to better address these small cities and their small budgets. And they are resource limited, and they're not going to therefore go out and redo everything. They have comprehensive plans in place, and they'll probably look and examine to see where those comprehensive plans could best be changed outside of the land use system that maybe isn't doing everything all at once, but saying, you know, we want to reach out to this airport where industrial land makes sense and extend our UGB out that way, but we can't find the resources right now to do all of the planning tools that were being required by the state goals, and instead we'd like to do it piecemeal as businesses develop out there, as we need to extend the infrastructure, make sure the plans are in place to do this responsibly. I think implying that we would fundamentally change how we interact with our citizenry is unfair. And I think that our local government is very sensitive to the needs of the people that live out there. And that's why they're your partners in the land use system right now. But in Eastern Oregon, that partnership is becoming onerous and impossible to work under. And I understand that this is sort of a chicken and egg issue. Is the land use problem exacerbating the population problem, which then exacerbates the jobs problem? Or is it that the jobs and the population are diminishing and the land use system is just kind of also in the way, and since everything is population dependent, you can't make any changes in the land use system without first changing the population? I think this bill gives opportunities for local governments to experiment and find out if it is an issue of the land use laws are so prescriptive in Eastern Oregon that the companies that might want to come in just don't feel it's worth it when they can go literally less than a mile across a river and locate in Idaho if you're in Malheur County, or go across a different river and go up to Washington and deal with those systems up there. So the opportunity Senate Bill 25 presents to tinker at the edges is important for those local communities to start driving their own destinies. I believe that our local officials can do it responsibly without tearing down the economic development that they do have there, and I think that Senate Bill 25 will give them the chance to prove that. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony.
Well said.
Commissioner?
Senator Edwards, Vice Chair Olson, committee members, that's a tough act to follow as a commissioner. Thank you for that great testimony. And thank you all for the opportunity to speak to you today in support of Senate Bill 25, which is a step in the right direction regarding the land use disparity between rural and urban Oregon. Curry County's rural economy is diverse, like many counties throughout the state of Oregon, and the ability to work with what you have is essential for a rural county, for a rural county's survival. Senate Bill 25 would allow Curry and other rural counties the ability to better work with the resources within our counties and promote responsible economic development and growth for our residents through a local citizen-driven public process. This public process of adopting a local comprehensive land use plan is ideal for our rural counties and would give us the necessary tools to craft what fits best for not only my rural Southern Oregon County and communities, but other rural counties as well. Curry County's land allocation has 66% owned and managed by the federal government, with 1% owned by the state, 7% farm, and 22% private timberland. This leaves us only able to fully assess and collect from roughly 4.5% of the property base within Curry County, and the current statewide planning goals do not help address these disparities. Senate Bill 25 will greatly assist Curry County, but only if amended, and I have submitted the necessary amendment this afternoon. The amendment would change language to allow counties with less than 6% population growth since the previous decennial census, bringing in Curry County. Although Curry County has seen a 5.8% population growth since the 2000 decennial census, this growth is skewed and is mainly retirees, as it is relatively inexpensive to live within Curry County. This growth is also from investors, as 30% of the properties within Curry County are owned by people who do not live there. This 5.8% growth is not from the needed working families and the jobs they need to live in Curry County. A good example of this is the irony as well, is the school board members and staff you visited with today. I am also a Port Arthur Langlois school board member, and those of you that visited, that were visited with your rural county members like myself, more than likely heard the same message. We have over 70% free and reduced lunch in our schools, and with continued decline in enrollment, we will not survive. These courses will not alter without action, and working families and the needed family wage jobs to support them will not come to fruition without understanding and assistance. Senate Bill 25, with a proposed amendment, is a piece of that assistance and will give Curry and other rural counties the responsible tools needed for local input to craft the needed comprehensive land use plans that are best for our rural counties and their communities. Chair Edwards, Vice Chair Olson, and committee members, I thank you again for the opportunity to speak with you today, and I encourage your due pass recommendation on Senate Bill 25 with a proposed amendment. This legislation is a much needed step to help grow local economies, and I appreciate your consideration. I also would like to add, and it's unfortunate that Senator Thompson is not here, Chair Edwards, with regards to his question of DLCD, and it was commented by this woman here. I forget your name. I apologize. County commissioners, I know Judge Perry knows how to take care of his farm and ag businesses within his county. I know how to take care of my farm and ag businesses within Curry County. I don't need DLCD to tell me how to take care of my ag farm and ag businesses in Curry County. Our citizens within our counties are very, on both sides of the issue, are very, very active when it comes to land use planning within our own local systems. And we are good stewards of our residences and their businesses within our counties. So again, I thank you for your consideration.
Thank you for your testimony, Commissioner. The amendment that you've submitted, did you do any analysis as to how many counties would be brought in if you went to the 6% population growth?
In my quick analysis, and not a thorough analysis, I believe it's only Curry County okay. with populations. But I will have that before you and on your desk before the end of the day.
Okay. Thank you. Questions?
I do have yep. a question. Thanks for Aaron. Aaron, so just to clarify, is the League formally opposed to this bill? Or are you just speaking for a few cities?
Chair Edwards, Senator Dembro, part of the process by which we set our priorities, one of the consistent discussions that we've had is about looking at possible regionalization of some of the statewide land use. And at this point, we do support the concept and the policy behind Senate Bill 25.
Thank you. And next up, we have Carla Mickelson, Laurel Hines, Irene Gilbert, and Peter Canacy. Did I say that right? Peter Canacy from Benton County. Going once, going twice. Okay. Go ahead.
Hi, my Senator Edwards, members of the committee, Senator Olson, it's nice to see you again. I Since 1948, my family has had a farm near Woodburn, Oregon. Since it's not an Eastern Oregon farm at 185 acres, it's small compared to them, but it is fairly sizable for the Willamette Valley. I'm also a Marion County Planning Commissioner, and I've been one for 10 years. I am not speaking for the Marion County Planning Commission today. I'm only speaking for myself as a citizen. I have concerns about this bill. I think everyone really wants economic viability for every part of the state of Oregon, and I certainly can sympathize with areas of Oregon that are losing their population. They're seeing the communities they've worked for and lived in and loved to raise their families in slowly disappearing. But this bill isn't tinkering and it's not experimenting. It is suspending land use law in a particular area. And I think it's trying to, there's an expectation that this bill can solve an economic problem that is beyond the scope of land use planning to solve. The economic losses in rural America are significant. It's not just Oregon. So, as Oregonians, I think we always try to come up with solutions that are unique to us, and I think that we really need to work very hard to sustain our rural communities, but I do not believe suspending land use law is the best way to go about it. My greatest fear, I spent the last 15 years trying to protect my family's farm from development pressure in the Willamette Valley. This pressure is constant. I am now training my children because when I'm dead, if we want to keep the farm and our family, my children are going to have this struggle. And I believe that if you allow an area of Oregon to suspend land use law for however noble the reasons, that every place in Oregon is going to want a suspension of land use law. And that Curry County is here, and I fully respect the commissioner for wanting to do what's best for his county, but that he is here trying to attach his county onto this bill that's supposed to be to help Eastern Oregon shows that when you allow this to happen, other people are going to come in, and they're going to try to get their land use rules suspended. Oregon needs a unified system. Everybody needs to know, if I'm a developer, do I really want to have one set of rules in Eastern Oregon, one set of rules in Curry County, one set of rules in Marion County, and one set of rules in Multnomah County? I think it's important for state and for orderly development that we have consistent laws. That doesn't mean I don't want Eastern Oregon, Southern Oregon, and Curry County to have help, but I don't think that this bill is the way that they're going to get it. There are, I think Oregon land use laws have been fairly flexible, and I think that if you want to expand your urban growth boundary in a rural area, you're probably going to have less difficulty than trying to expand it in an area that has farmland abutting an already existing UGB and facing the loss of those very valuable acres. So I would just ask you to consider, I know the individual plights of these communities are very compelling, and they certainly are to me. But please understand what this bill is really doing and the pressure that it's going to put on other areas that most of you, I think, have acknowledged have problems with trying to protect their farmland. I think there are other ways to help Eastern Oregon, and I would support any of them. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Hello, thank you for the opportunity to speak. My name is Laurel Hines, and I live in Salem. And I'm opposed to this bill, mainly because I also think it opens the floodgate to all the other many other counties wanting to be part of this. And I grew up in a very small town in Illinois and still have relatives who live in Illinois and Indiana, and I see the result of sprawl there with development on farmland. And it's really disgusting to me when I go back there and there's just such horrible splitting of big farms, and now that big equipment is needed to use for those farms, it's making it harder and harder for farms to operate the way they would like to, because there's all these little houses that have been put in the middle of farmland. And I also agree with the woman from League of Conservation Voters, or League of Women Voters, I think, that the dying towns are not the result of our land use system. It's happening all over the country. And it's I believe it's because people want to live and the businesses want to come to where there's good schools, there's culture, there's things that people can do, good doctors. They just, and young people are moving away from the small towns for those reasons, not because of our land use system. And once these changes happen, they will happen all over the state in terms of other counties wanting to opt in, thinking it's the magic to solving their problems when it's not. And to answer Senator Thompson's question to the one man about whether county commissioners can be trusted to make wise decisions about land use, I have witnessed that, at least in Marion County, from my experience, they are not as knowledgeable about facts and protecting resources as the land conservation and development people are. Both Republican and Democratic neighbors of mine joined to fight a subdivision south of Salem in a rural area on farmland, and one of the commissioners understood some of the language and the facts about dwindling groundwater and what the experts had provided for them to understand, and two of the commissioners didn't really seem to understand the facts and the science behind that, and it was very frustrating. They even ignored their own peer reviewer who said that the development shouldn't happen. And it seems to me that the county commissioners make often, not always, but often make decisions based on politics and beliefs and what they want and what the local community wants, not on what's good for sustainability. And I think that they would probably not pay attention to the climate change issues, to land use hazards, forest fire hazards, which are going to be increasing in the future, and that sort of thing. So I think we have to make sure that wise decisions are made, and wise decisions are made for the whole state and not just by local communities in hopes that attracting some people that want a little business on a large amount of farmland, when those kind of things are going to be more and more needed in the future. We need more farmland to feed people in the future with the increasing populations. So I think I've covered everything. I think everybody, we've heard many comments, but I hope you consider that this would just open the floodgates to change and decimating of our land use system. Thank you.
Thank you.
Irene Gilbert. Currently from Union County, I've also lived in Curry County and Wheeler County, so I am one of those rural kinds of people. And one comment, just the question about county commissioners having the best interests and representing the people. I think that they attempt to do that. I also think that they sometimes are naive, and they get in over their head when dealing with especially big developers with attorneys that can pretty much snow them under. So I have concerns about Senate Bill 25. I hope that you do not pass it. One thing that I react to is they keep talking about land use law, and while it is the law, they are land use goals, and the state establishes the goals, and it is the counties and the cities that establish the criteria and the implementation of those. And I can tell you that, from my experience, there are many counties and cities who have very, very dated land use laws on their land use plan. In Union County, I think it was put together in like the 80s. So I would like to see, before you talk about exempting areas from the land use rules or goals, to ask these counties if they have made an effort to update their land use plans to accomplish the things that they're hoping to accomplish here. And maybe it's not the land use goals that are the problem. And they can update sections of those land use rules, local ones. So that needs, I think, to be the first order of business. The next thing is, as far as Curry County and them needing to have exemptions from the land use rules, Curry County, their economy is based on logging, fishing, tourists, lily farms, and other farming. My dad lived in Brookings till 1997, so I've spent a lot of time down there. I've worked in the lily fields. I've worked in the shrimp plants down there. And I'm not sure that changing these land use laws is going to accomplish anything positive for that community. What would change things would be if the state would get involved in the forest management plans so that the logging can continue there, the fishing can, you know, and the recreational things, the ATVers that come to the coast to drive their ATVs or go to the forest to drive them, and the people that go there to drive around or hunt, whatever. Those are the people that need to be able to utilize the resources that are there. You don't need to change those resources. I know when Senator Olson, normally I agree with you, but when you use the term non-productive land to describe anything other than farmland, I just cringed because, you know, I'm from Kinzu. I went all through grade school at Kinzu Grade School. That was a logging town. I went back and hunted there for 20 years after we moved there every single year. I spent thousands of dollars in that community, paying for lodging, paying for food, paying for gas. When they closed that area, right, Chevrolet, I heard, really wondered if they could continue in business because every year we had one of our vehicles at least break down. And so they ended up kind of including us in their business plan. I am concerned, and what gets me involved in land use planning is we've already done a lot of things that have really undermined land use planning in this state. And I think about things like the green energy developments, and I'll be quick here. I can tell you're getting nervous about me, but
I'm not nervous.
But I am. The business of renewable energy has really had a lot of impacts on undermining land use planning in this state. For instance, currently, you can build a wind farm without being in compliance with the viewscapes. You can build one without being in compliance with the archaeological protections. You do not have to meet the goals related to farmland anymore. It used to be 20 acres. Now they've basically thrown that aside for the developments of wind energy. And when it comes to even things like protected areas, the only time those land use rules apply is when they're building a development right in a protected area. It means that things like all of our wild and scenic areas are being, the views are being damaged. They're having wind farms built right up to within like a mile of them. So anyway, I think our land use rules are becoming meaningless because of exceptions, and this is just one more exception. And I think that they provide a really strong base for what should be touted as important about Oregon and what used to be important, which was our natural resources, our views, our, you know, all of that stuff is kind of going under the bus because of industrial development. I think we have to be careful. The rural communities offer a lot more than an industrial base if we just advertise it. Thank you.
Question.
Yeah.
You piqued my interest. Do you live in Illinois, small town in Illinois, and then relatives in Indiana?
Mm-hmm.
Whereabouts?
I grew up in Bartlett, Illinois, and I have relatives in, I can't remember the town. My sister lives in a really small town in Illinois, and it's near Springfield, but it's further out. It's somewhere out in the farmland.
Because I'm a native of Illinois, so I always, when we have natives in the house, we like to. But I will caution you this. You say sometimes county commissioners are fooled by folks and stuff like that.
That was what I said.
Trust me, this body is too.
I have a question. Is it Carla?
Yeah.
So from your experience, you talked a little bit about, from a planning commission standpoint, testifying for yourself, I understand, not representing the planning commission, but So we had testimony earlier from folks in rural Oregon saying, yeah, yes, you know, we could do this stuff, but we don't have the resources. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, even Marion County has difficulty with resources to go into planning. Much of the planning department is funded by fees and permits. So when 2008 occurred and there was like zero building in Marion County, they lost a great deal of their planning staff. So I do sympathize. I wish I had answers.
Mm-hmm.
I know when DLCD representative was here and talking about grants, I would hesitate to be caught in public saying a tax, but if there was some like on transfer fees, you know, like 0.001%, where you can cough up some money and share it statewide, in order to do this. I did used to work for the Urban Planning Department at Portland State University. It was my honor to work with Noha Tulang, who is a very famous international planner. His belief was that it was very, very important that the state regulate planning, and because there are such limited public resources to go to so many places, and that the state should be able to decide where they want what kinds of development, because different kinds of developments clearly have different costs. I think trying to update the plan in a small, like Burns, in Eastern Oregon would be different than telling Metro, update your plan. There's certainly a cost difference, and I do think that because the rural counties have fewer resources than Multnomah County or even Marion County, that they will need financial assistance to update their plans and to attract the kinds of developments that are really compatible with their community.
Thank you for that perspective.
I have a question.
Yeah.
We got some information up here earlier from a person that testified, and there was a project that they wanted to put together, and in the Planning Commission, Mr. Young from the Northeast Regional Representative of the LCDC, they needed to follow Goal 9, Goal 11, Goal 12, and Goal 14.
Yeah.
Would you have any idea how much it would cost to follow those goals? I mean, especially this is a small community of Arlington, would it?
You're going to have to find documentation that your community, whichever entity you're representing, is following those goals. So most of what your cost is going to be is in staff time, trying to do some of the research. I would not want to burden the lady who is here from Wheeler County, who I know that some of the communities in Marion County contract with private planners. That's only an option if you have the resources to do it.
Well, they did follow up.
Yeah.
They did contract with Tennyson Engineering, and he thought it would be a pretty easy little project, until LCDC said, oh, by the way. So do you think there could be any movement to maybe not take away these total goals and total plans, but give some flexibility so that a small community could come in and say, this is Goal 9, 11, 12, and 14, and it only costs us $300 to do it? And would you accept that as...
Well, I wish that the DLCD person was here, because she's the only one who can really, really say that.
Yeah. But I mean, from a planning standpoint,
I think that you just need to show that you've done your due diligence and that you've really you've made an honest effort to the extent that you can afford to do it.
Okay,
Senator, do you want to hear from the department on this particular question, or?
Well, yeah, if
we're getting close on time.
Are they still here?
Yes.
There we go.
Thank you, each from the panel for testifying. Mm-hmm. You can.
Can I?
Thank you.
Think about economic development as far as updating these plans. You know, there's a lot of money there.
You've got 2 minutes. And to talk about 9, 11, 12, 14.
Great. How much can I charge you for that? No. thank you, Chair Edwards.
You have a grant or something.
We have a grant. Chair Edwards, members of the committee, I can speak quickly. So on the City of Arlington in particular, actually, when they confronted a difficulty with getting that plan acknowledged, what we did is we brought out a team of all the state agencies, sat down with the City of Arlington planners and did a work session and ended up walking them through and approving the amendment to their urban growth boundary expansion. So I would say at the point at which we interceded there, we did so with assistance and we were able to bring them a low-cost solution. I know I can't promise that in every case. I know they would have wished that might have gone faster, but I think we reached success in the end for that community. And unfortunately, we missed actually the ribbon cutting for them opening up that industrial park, but they are pleased with it. And it's a well-positioned, piece of property. And other areas, the couple that I will speak to that are really working on streamlining is the urban growth boundary amendment process for communities. That's House Bill 2254, which was passed unanimously by the legislature in 2013, to really try to say, what are the state resources in terms of data that we have that we can make available to communities so they really can kind of put it almost all on one spreadsheet and end up coming out the other side, meeting the goals and principles, but not being required to do quite the level of detailed level of work. The other areas that I will say is, again, in that technical assistance process, us matching, we just went through a process where our EFU statutes, our exclusive farm use statutes, are very similar throughout Eastern Oregon, and actually some other areas are also similarly sort of clumped together. So we contracted with one planning organization to do an update to a code that all counties could elect to adopt. So it's a model code. They don't actually have costs, therefore, that involved in doing it, but it can be particularized to that community. So they don't have to adopt it in whole. They can take it and use it as a frame of reference to build what they want. So those are an example of some of the things that we're really trying to do on the ground. I know I overspent my last time talking. There's a lot that we really are trying to do, working both at the local government level with county commissions and with cities as well.
Do you have a generalized cost to, like, fill out the goal 9? Is it just a big form and you got all the stuff to fill in, or is it enormous?
Chair Edwards, Senator Olson, it can be quite extensive, and it's going to depend upon the size of your community and really what the focus of your community, what you're trying to do. So the goal 9 part is what we call the economic opportunities analysis, and it asks a community to look at what are their opportunities for economic growth, have those be grounded in what are their community assets. Do they have rail? Do they have good port land? You know, all of those assets that can go into attracting some industry. Then overlay that with, well, what land do they currently have within their urban growth boundaries? And that simple equation gets them sort of what they need for way of expansion. So it really varies depending upon what the communities are asking and what they're trying to achieve, as well as what their existing sort of fabric and resources are. So I can't, the short answer is no, I cannot give you a precise number because it's so variable for communities.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anything? I guess my final thoughts are the reason we heard this bill is that I think that there is merit to this conversation. Since I've been in the legislature, I don't feel like we've really had a serious conversation about economic development in Eastern Oregon particularly, but rural Oregon. In 2010, I think it was 2010, and I'm just going off the top of my head, so if you want to quote me, fine, but it's probably, it could very easily be off a little bit, but I had Oregon State pull together some numbers about tax flows, tax revenue flows, and spending flows in the state of Oregon, and I think maybe it was 2009, and so it's a little dated now, but it probably hasn't changed a whole lot. And and I remember seeing that, I believe it was Wheeler County, paid 55 cents in taxes for every dollar in services received. Washington County was paying $2.65 in taxes for every dollar of services received. There's a lot of ways to different, you know, look at it, different angles and slices of how you look at that data, but overall, the picture was really clear. Rural Oregon was hurting, and metropolitan Oregon was doing much better. So we're all in this together, and I'm not proposing that we blow up the land use planning system in Oregon, but to the extent that our rural communities need some help from the state in, you know, not getting rid of, I mean, nobody wants to see the sage grouse, you know, become listed, and, you know, there's some very real concerns to some of these things, but there's, you know, like Senator Thompson, I mean, I think the frustration that he was clearly showing comes from a perception that those of us that live in the valley just don't care. And we just say no, no, no. So I like some of the things that I'm hearing that the department is working on, and that sounds promising, particularly if it's real. But I think right now there's, you know, you've got this traditional economy that's existed in these rural communities for so long, and folks, you know, that an actual shrinking population base because there's a deficit of hope. And people just want, you know, the opportunity locally to be able to, you know, pull themselves up by the bootstraps. So it's a difficult issue. I don't disagree with Peggy Lynch's assessment when she said, well, this isn't specific to Oregon. This is a problem that we've had all across our nation. And it's an international issue. Rural communities everywhere are having these issues, and it's not because of Oregon's land use planning. So it's multifaceted, and I think that the solutions need to be well thought out and comprehensive, and I hope that whether or not we end up doing anything with this bill or not this legislative session, I hope that we can continue those conversations and move towards something real and tangible that's going to help our communities, our rural communities, that are very distressed, and if you don't live in them, you just don't get it. So with that, I'm going to close the public hearing, and we are adjourned. And we are adjourned.